Hi, this is Adam Barton from Proximo Jornada, and you're listening to the Sell Us Out podcast.
Bem jogado por Simão, a passar por dois adversários, Simão, a tentar oferecer o golo Figo, e a bola é gol! O golo da Figo!
Rui Costa vai, acreditou, vai tirar para o golo, atira o golo!
And we welcome you to episode number 23 of the Seleção Podcast, a proud partner of Portugal.net. My name is Danny Pinto. I am your host. Thank you guys so much for once again tuning in to the podcast as we are halfway through Euro 2020 qualifying, and we have two big matchups coming up on Friday and Monday that could very well determine if the Seleção will qualify for Euro 2020 as Group B winners or as the second place team. As always, a reminder of how you can support the show. You can definitely go to SeleçãoPod.com, where we have all of our episodes, as well as team information, schedules, links for tickets, and player profiles. Also on the site are links to all of our social media, Facebook.com/SeleçãoPod. Give us a like on Facebook there and share the page with all of your friends. Also, give us a follow on Twitter and on Instagram. You can find the handle at SeleçãoPod on Twitter and on Instagram. And go ahead and shoot us an email if you'd like, SeleçãoPod@gmail.com. Make sure that you are subscribing via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or whichever podcast listening platform you use to listen to our show. And we greatly appreciate all of you listening each and every episode. And go ahead and leave a 5-star review and a quick word or two. That would greatly help out the podcast, and we would greatly appreciate your patronage on that. So we have another great show coming up here on episode number 23, as we will review the latest 25-man roster for the upcoming qualifiers against Luxembourg on Friday and Monday against Ukraine away. That is obviously the big one there. And we'll also be joined by Aaron Barton later on in the episode. He of the outlet Proxima Jornada. He'll also give us his thoughts on the roster and the upcoming matches. But let's first get started with the 25-man roster that Fernan Sanch announced on October the 3rd, just this past Thursday. Five changes from the last call-ups in September. Goalkeepers, they stay the same. Rui Patrice, Beto, and José Sá. At center back, we have Pep returning from injury. Ruben Dias, José Font, and the first surprise of the call-ups, which was Ruben Smith making his debut, getting his first call-up, wearing the Seleção shirt. At the fullbacks, we have Rafael Guerreiro, Nelson Smith, Mario Rui, and Ricardo Pereira. He gets the recall to the Seleção. In the midfield, William Carvalho, Danilo, Ruben Neves, Bruno Fernandes, João Moutinho, Pizzi, and the recall of João Mário. And at the forwards and the wings, we have João Félix, Bernard Silva, Gonçalo Guedes, Rafa Silva, André Silva, Bruma, and Cristiano Ronaldo, the captain of all captains. And of course, André Silva and Bruma getting the recalls there. So five new faces, different from what we saw in September. Those who are out from September, Daniel Carris, João Concel, Renato Santos, Diogo Jota, and Daniel Pedens. First off, initially, let's actually get to an issue here that we haven't really dealt with in the last few call-ups, and it's injuries. Rafa, as I mentioned, was called to the Seleção, but Monday it was announced that he was going to be out due to a left abductor injury. And as of this recording, and as we're recording Tuesday night, Fernan Sanch has not named a replacement and most likely will not name a replacement. So Rafa is out, and there doesn't seem to be any replacement coming our way as of this recording. Also, some injuries to look out for. William and Mario Rui, they did some light exercises away from the team Tuesday in practice. as they prepare for Luxembourg in Portugal. William has been dealing with a leg muscle issue dating back to last week. And also last week, Mario Rui sustained a thigh injury in Champions League action. So they were not with the team per se in practice today. They had 22, the 22 players, the other 22 players, I should say, all took part in a full practice, but Mario Rui and William were on the sidelines doing light exercises just to kind of get some light work done. So for me, the main concern in terms of the injuries, and I'll start with William, is if he's out for either both games, one game, but what it does to the tactics of Fernand Sanches is something that's very interesting for me. We've seen how good Ruben Neves has been on the club side with Wolverhampton, but there always seems to be a lot of room in the middle of the field in this current formation with the two defensive mids when he gets the start. We saw it versus Lithuania in the last game, and we saw it in the first match in group play against Ukraine at Stade de Luge. To be fair, in both instances, he was paired up with William, and they were the two defensive midfield. They were the two defensive midfield tandem there. So I'm not sure how different of an approach it might be in tactics. If let's say William is out for one or two games, and then Danilo and Ruben Neves are playing alongside one another, but I do think that's something to look out for. Obviously, if you had your druthers and you're playing the two defensive mid system, you'd rather have William and Danilo playing there than having William out altogether. So for me, that's something definitely to be looking forward to, or definitely to look out for, I should say, as we approach Friday and the game against Luxembourg. With Hafa out, it's twofold. For me, it's a big loss, in my opinion, just because of the game-changing speed he can bring to a match. We saw it in the final of the Nations League, and we saw it against Lithuania, where he can be the difference when he gets on the field in terms of just speed and just being able to open up play for the Slesong and the attack. He was involved in two of the goals that Ronaldo scored in the second half in against Lithuania. So he gives that option of just being able to open things up a little bit more when he's on the field. What's puzzling to me is that Fernand Sanches is choosing not to replace him on the 25-man roster. Now, the roster was announced on Thursday. It was announced Monday that he'd be out of the squad. Is that not enough time to get someone like a Diogo Jota, who has been called up the last few times, who has familiarity with the players and with the system that Fernand Sanches is trying to bring forth to the Slesong? I thought that might have been an easy substitution to make, especially with Hafa out, to bring Diogo Jota back in. And of course, we haven't seen Diogo Jota contribute to the Slesong yet, but he has been in those practices. He has been, you know, he has traveled with the team. He has been part of the 25 the last few times, and that would bring a little bit of camaraderie, a little bit of synergy that you may not have with someone that you might bring in. A lot of people I've been seeing been yelling for Rafael Leão, and yes, his time is going to come, and I even like the idea of bringing him in solely for the fact of getting him some senior experience, you know, getting him some experience with the team, you know, in practices. Again, the camaraderie is a big thing. Synergy is a big thing. Chemistry is a big thing. So at least getting him, you know, him being the perhaps the 24th or the 25th man at this level in his career, I don't think that would have been a bad idea to call him up. But something, or in this case, someone, is better than no one. And I think having these injury issues should be a wake-up call for Fernand Sanches. And it same goes for Mario Rui. If Mario Rui can't go, you know, bring back João Cancelo. Again, a man who has played for the Slesong now, who has contributed more, quite frankly, than Mario Rui has, and who can play left back if needed. Yeah, it's to me, it's not a tough decision if if someone can't go, and we're looking at Monday, and we have a game on Friday, I mean, yeah, it's not to say that they can't go Friday and they can't go Monday, but I would much rather have someone ready to go if Mariuhui cannot go. And again, Mariuhui is a substitute. He's playing behind Rafael Guerreiro. But wouldn't you want to have more options than having, you know, if Rafael Guerreiro goes down, what then? You know, if you're not bringing anybody in. So I just mentioned João Cancelo there. We had a Twitter poll last week as we were approaching the call-ups, and the Twitter poll was, who do you think should be the starting right back for this Lesson right now? And 59% of you guys went with Ricky P, Ricardo Pereira. 20% went with João Cancelo, who did not get the call-up at all. 15% went with Nelson Smith, and 6% went with Cedric. I threw in Cedric just because he just scored a goal for Southampton a few weeks back. You know, throw the old man a bone, and the old man, I mean, what, he's like 26, 27 maybe. But for me, I mentioned João Cancelo. He's played left back before. Nelson Smith has played left back already this season. He's played more left back than any of the other right backs who have left back experience, if that makes sense. But Nelson Smith's had two starts already this season on the left-hand side. For me, I just have not seen enough of Mariuhui to have him warrant a place on this team, when right now you have three right backs, two of which can play left, and I think the quality of a group of Ricardo Pereira, Nelson Smith, Rafael Guerreiro, and João Cancelo is a much stronger group than Ricardo Pereira, Nelson Smith, Rafael Guerreiro, and Mariuhui. That's just my opinion. Nothing against Mariuhui. I just have not seen him do enough. Now, the argument obviously was João Cancelo being on the team at all. He's just not getting enough playing time at Man City right now, and I agree with that argument 100%. But if we're saying just in terms of quality of player and quality of defender, I'll go with Ricardo Pereira, Nelson Smith, Rafael Guerreiro, and João Cancelo as my four fullbacks. Over having Mariuhui being part of that quartet, so that's a look at the right back and the fullback situation, and the injuries, because the injuries, again, this is something that we have not seen really since the beginning of qualifying, where we didn't have Bruno Fernandes for the first two games. We were anticipating having João Félix make his debut and, you know, start to set the world on fire, but he didn't get the call against Ukraine, and then was injured for the Serbia match, the second match there. So, I just hope that these injuries, and again, these are injuries with, and all due respect to all three of these players, William is the number one concern here, because I think he has played himself into such an important part of the way the Slesson plays, especially in that midfield, especially in that two defensive mid system. That him being out, I think, is a huge, huge hole to fill, and I fully believe that Neil Pereira is up to the task, and I feel that Ruben Neves can reach his potential, but I am much more confident and much more comfortable having having William Carvalho in that middle over the other two. But I would, and I just want to see William Carvalho play. He's been just fantastic, in my opinion. So, as for the other new faces, obviously, Ruben Smith is the biggest story, getting his first cap after all his controversy in the last 18 months. He's playing really, really well right now at Olympiacos, and Fernando Sanches was quoted as saying that his inclusion would have happened in the previous call-ups had he not been injured. So, he's obviously someone that has been on Fernando Sanches' radar since the move to Olympiacos, and it's going to be interesting to see if he gets any run. To me, he is the fourth of the four center backs there, but I like the call up myself. I think Daniel Cahiz, it was never his time in September, and I think whatever time he had, I think, is gone. He may in the future be, you know, that third or fourth, but in terms of being an actual option at center back, I don't think Daniel Cahiz's days with Celeste's song Will Be Too Plentiful. And again, Fer, who got the call last September, or got the call in September after Pep got injured. I'm not too upset that Fer did not get the call. For me, it's your, and I talk a little bit about it with Aaron Barton in the interview. We are slowly getting some depth back into our center backs, and you know, we right now have Ruben Dias at 22 years old, who is going to be the starting center or a starting center back for the Selecion for many, many years. Fech, I think, is like 21, 22. He obviously has a bright future. Ruben Smith is only 25. So if you want to go and bridge a gap between, you know, Pep and José Font, and maybe if Fech isn't that guy yet, and if Ruben Smith can play into that, all of a sudden you have a pairing of Ruben Smith and Ruben Dias, where you can play these guys for many years together, as well as having a Fech coming up the ranks, and you know, so many of the younger players too in our youth system that are you know, about 2 or 3 years away from getting a consistent call up to the A team. So I think it's an interesting call up, that's for sure. I mean, it made a lot of news, made a lot of headlines, but we will see if Ruben Smith even hits the field in these two games against Luxembourg and Ukraine. Bruma, obviously, I think a well-deserved call. He's playing very well at PSV, 4 goals and 4 assists in 15 matches in all competitions. Andres Silva, he started his last four Bundesliga matches for Frankfurt. Obviously, he has a new lease on life there so far. He's scored in his last 3 starts, so that's very positive there. And João Mário, who's got 4 assists in his 7 matches with Lokomotiv Moscow. Again, he's on a lone spot there. And he even assisted good old Sonweather in a win against Orenburg late last month. So a Portuguese connection there. But João Mário, good to see him play himself back in for contention for a call-up to the Selecion. He has a lot of, obviously, a lot of talent, just never really worked out for him in Italy. He gets a second chance here playing in Russia. And like I mentioned, 4 assists in 7 matches so far in his first campaign in Moscow. So let's go to some players real quick that made the team, made the squad, that I myself have a little bit of reservation in terms of their call-up. But I understand, just because they seem to be non-such guys. If that makes any sense. Gonçalo Guedes, who obviously, you know, the hero of all heroes in the Nations League final, obviously had that tremendous goal against Serbia last month, the second goal in the 4-2 win in Serbia. But with Valencia this season, he has yet to record a goal or an assist. And he was most recently on the bench in Valencia's last 2 league games. He did start last week in the Champions League, but he does seem to have the confidence of Fernan Sanch. And obviously the experience of providing goals for the Selecion, which is a good thing. I mean, I'm selfish. I'd rather him score for the Selecion than do anything for Valencia. But, you know, he hasn't done much yet in terms of form this campaign for Valencia yet. But hopefully that his Selecion form will come back true to form and help the Selecion out, because I think he will be needed in these 2 matches, especially, I believe, in that Ukraine match on Monday. As for the other player, for me, it's Beasy. He started this season on fire. He had 8 goals and 3 assists in his first 6 matches in all competitions. But in his last 4, no goals, no assists, and he's been subbed off in all 4 matches, including the 2 Champions League matches that Benfica have lost to open up their group play. So, It's a little concerning for him. Obviously, he's not a starter, but again, when we're looking at who should be called up, who shouldn't be called up, obviously form always kind of takes, form's one of the first things that we look at. But in terms of these kind of chemistry guys, I think Guedes and Pizzi are kind of in that realm, especially with Fernan Sanch. And I wouldn't expect much contribution from Pizzi. Unless it's as a late sub to kind of hold everything together, but Guedes, again, I think he still has a lot to give to the Selecao, and it might be as soon as this weekend against, to me, I think his biggest contribution may come in that Ukraine game just because of the physicality of that match. So the top, or the 25, I should say, it's getting to a point where there are more and more players who are not on this team of such great quality that this is becoming a great problem to have. And it's almost, if Nunsic is going to be criticized for not taking a lot more players, and that's obviously a good thing for the Selecao, as it bodes well for the future, because in terms of age of this team, just up front, João Félix, 19, Gonçalo Guedes, 22, André Silva, 23, Bruma, 24. We talked about how the age of Ruben Dias. He's 22. Ruben Smith, 25. The fullbacks are in their prime right now, with Ricard Pereira at 26, Nelson Smith and Rafael Guerreiro at 25, Mario Rui a little bit on the other side at 28. But we have a lot of players who are slowly, in the next 1 or 2 years, definitely coming into their prime and getting matches like this and qualifying for Europe, hopefully, and being able to put themselves in a position to defend the European Championship gives these players all kinds of experience and hopefully all kinds of confidence heading forward to World Cups and Euros coming up. So before we talk about the matches on Friday and Monday versus Luxembourg and Ukraine respectively, let's go to our interview with Aaron Barton of Proxima Jornada. He was kind enough to give us some time and give us his thoughts on the 25-man roster and on the upcoming matches. So here's our interview with Aaron Barton of Proxima Jornada right here on episode 23 of the Selecao podcast. Well, with two more qualifiers coming up this week, we now go to one of our Selecao experts, and we're kind enough to spend some time here with Aaron Barton. Aaron is from the website Proxima Jornada. You can follow Aaron on Twitter at Proxima Jornada 1. That's Proxima Jornada 1. Aaron, Danny Pinto here from the States. How you doing today?
Hello, Danny. Thanks for having me on, mate. Thanks a lot.
Well, let's get right to it. You know, two big matches coming up here on Friday and on Monday for the Selecao, and the roster was announced last week. What did you think of the 25-man roster that Fernand Sanch has called up? Any surprises for you on either who was called up or about the number of changes that Fernand Sanch made?
Not particularly, to be honest. I expected some changes. I think it's, as it always is, a really, really good squad. And obviously the five changes, you've seen Renato Sanchez, he got called up, but he's now not in action again. Again, I saw a little bit of surprise online about that. I wasn't particularly surprised, to be honest. I don't think he's set the world alight so far with his time in France, but hopefully he's still only young, time to get back into the squad. Other than that, I think André Silva coming into the squad, I think that's deserved. Bruma, I think that's deserved. João Mário as well, he's doing well in Russia. And then, obviously, the big one is the right-back question. So, Ricardo Pereira, I think everybody, especially those in England who watch him regularly, that's no surprise. He's been playing some of the best football of his career for the past, it's over a year now, so that call-up was always going to come. And then, obviously, Ruben Semedo came into the squad, which, again, and I know we'll probably move on to that and speak more in depth on that, but I think, again, deserved. If you take the personal stuff out of it, you take the moral question out of it, Fernando Santos, he came out, he said it perfectly. He said, you know, everyone deserves a second chance, and he's been playing great football, so, you know, it's time for him to make his debut, and I think it is right that he's being called up. He has been playing well enough to get a call up anyway. So let's see how he does.
You know, we'll address some of the positions in question, and obviously the Ruben Smith story is a very interesting one. But of the five that have been called up, who do you think of those five has the most to gain with this either debut call up or being recalled to the Selecao?
I think I have to give it to Ricardo Pereira because I just think, I know he's had time, it's not his debut, he's had time in the squad before, he was at the World Cup, and I know he got a little bit of criticism in the World Cup and spent a little bit of time out the squad, but I do think the more and more I watch him, he has developed more as a player. And I do think, at the minute, I think it's only fair. I know, obviously, you got João Cancelo as well, but he hasn't been playing a lot for Man City. He's, you know, he's been on the bench quite a bit. So I think Ricardo does. I think he has a lot. I think he's got a lot to prove to himself. I think he'll have known this call up was coming. I mean, he won Leicester's Player of the Year last year, so for last season, and he started this season very, very well as well. So I do think he'll want to prove to himself that maybe some of the mistakes, or some of the, not so much mistakes, but some of the subpar performances he might have gave, he'll want to turn that around. He'll want to show the people of Portugal, he'll want to show people all over the world that he can transcend that form in the Premier League into international, which is, it's always a difficult thing to do, but he's been given another chance to do it, so let's hope he does.
We're talking with Aaron Barton of Proxima Jornada here on the Seleção podcast. Aaron, the talk of Ricardo Pereira kind of goes right into my next question here. You mentioned Ricardo Pereira, you mentioned João Cancelo. Obviously, Nelson Smith has gotten the call-up as well. Who do you think of those three, and maybe even throw Cedric out there as a, you know as an outlier, as a gentleman who's definitely given his all for the Seleção at right back as well. Who do you think is the number one option, or should be the number one option at right back for Fernando Santos and the Seleção?
I think at the minute it's got to be a toss up between Nelson Semedo and Ricardo Pereira, because purely due to game time, is that I just don't think, since I love João Cancelo, I think he's a fantastic player, and he had a good season at Juventus last season. I was looking forward to him kicking on with City this season, but I know things aren't always that easy, and he's got Kyle Walker ahead of him, and it's adjusting to the league. And I think Pep is doing with Cancelo what he did with Bernardo in his first season. Is that Bernardo, when he came in, it was appearances off the bench, cup competitions sometimes being played a little bit out of position, just sort of getting him in the squad any way that he can. But when you've got a squad as deep as Man City's, you know, it's always going to be difficult. But I think once he gets into that squad, gets a good run of games, then there's every chance that he'll be Portugal starting right back. But for now, I do think both Semedo and Pereira are playing regularly for the clubs, and one of them is playing for Barcelona in one of the best leagues in the world, and the other one's playing for Leicester, who are doing very well in one of the best leagues in the world. So I think it's got to be a toss-up between those two. But like you said, the other guys, Cedric, he's performed fantastically in the past. Maybe his time with his age, he's won. Santos might still consider him, but I don't think he's going to be at the forefront of his thinking. I think looking at someone like Cancelo, someone like Pereira, who are coming into a good age, who are in good form. Same with Semedo, he's younger. So at the minute, I'd say it was a toss up between Ricardo and Nelson Semedo. Whoever he goes with, you know they're going to give 100%. You know they've got technical ability. You know they're good players. So yeah, toss up between those two. But I do want to see. I like the competition. I like the fact that we've got so many top quality players fighting for one position. That's what breeds success ultimately, is that when players have to look over their shoulder at who's on the bench or who hasn't been called up, that only makes them work 10 times harder. And when you've got players who are playing for Man City, Barcelona, Leicester, all in good competitive leagues, it can only be a good thing for the Seleção.
We're talking with Aaron Barton of Proxima Jornada here on the Seleção podcast. You know, it's one of those things where as you mentioned, it's an almost like an embarrassment of riches having that much quality at right back. I believe some of those players, João Cancelo in particular, is good enough to even, you know, ply his trade on the left if needed for Fernando Santos. But again, it's one of those things where depth is something a good problem to have. In this version of the Seleção, and obviously in a lot of areas, midfield and up front as well. But let's go to an area that has been a troublesome area in terms of depth over the last few years, slowly getting its depth back now, which is the center back position. Obviously, Pep makes his return from injury onto the squad. Ruben Dias is obviously the young up and coming anchor of the center back position, but obviously the call up of Ruben Smith, we all know the human interest story, being charged with
with attempted murder, a kidnapping, brandishing a firearm, just to name a few, in the early part of last year while he was with Valencia, spent 5 months in jail, and is now getting his first ever call-up to the Seleção after a great start this season with Olympiacos, playing with José Sá and with Daniel Podence. What did you make of his call-up, and do you think it's a deserved call-up?
I do think it's a deserved call-up. I do think he's been playing well, and I've watched a couple of the Olympiacos games this season, and he's been part of the defence. I think they've only conceded one goal in the league, and like you say, it's his debut. If he's going just on club form, he's played very well. Ferro hasn't been called up this time from Benfica, and I know he's played, I think he's only conceded two or three in the league as well. So it's a tough one, but I think on this occasion, Ruben Chamed, 25 years old, coming up for his debut, he's been playing well. This is what he's been playing towards. And like you say, the people love a story like this. Well, they love drama. They love the fact that, like you say, it's the human interest side of it. But if you take that out of it, just based on form, does he deserve a call-up? I think he does. I do think he deserves a call-up. I mean, like you said, 141 days, I think it was, he spent in police custody and going through all that stuff. And I think Santos said in his press conference, which surprised a lot of people, but it didn't surprise me, after he was asked about calling him up, he said, I'd have called him up for the last two games, but he was injured. That's the only reason. That's the only, the reason why he was unable to call him up. But he's wanted to call him up since back then. So I think he said he's had his eye on him for a while now. So it shows that when he's performing at a good level and people are watching, whether he knew he was going to get a call up or not, I'm not too sure. But I think, like you said as well, it's a position that over the past couple of years we've relied a little bit on the age of Font and Pep, and now I think with Ruben Dias coming through, Ferro, I think Ferro's only 22, so he's, just because he hasn't been called up to this squad, he will get a chance, definitely get a chance. And yeah, I think it's looking a little bit more useful now. We're starting to get ready for, the end of the Portugal centre defence pairing that we know as Font and Pep, and I think it's good. We've got some good options coming through, Ruben Chamed being one of them.
You know, Aaron, going back to the human interest part of this thing, obviously no one is applauding the reasons why this is the story that it is. Ruben Chamed got into trouble, but everyone for the most part does love a great comeback story. And yeah, for so far in his comeback, we're looking at 18 months since the incidents happened. He's now getting a chance to put on the Seleção colors, and doing so at a high level with Olympiacos. So everyone loves a comeback story. Everyone is obviously just wants the best for this young man, and hopefully this is just the start of getting his club career, his football career turned around, and most importantly his life in general.
Yeah, definitely. I think Fernando Santos said in his press conference, people make mistakes. You can't always just judge somebody on mistakes that they made in the past. Obviously, like you said, it's not great. We'd have rather this never happened to begin with, but it can go one or two ways. You can bounce back from it, or you can let it consume you. And his football career might have been over at one point. So the fact that he's been able to, sort of move away from the trouble that he was getting in, he'll have had good people around him who are trying to separate him from any of the ills of the world. And the fact that he's getting his head down, he's working hard in training, he's playing well in the league, he's now got a call up, he will notice that the rewards are being reaped. So, carry on in that vein, and everyone gets a second chance, which is what this is. It's the second chance. Obviously, if anything like that was to ever happen again, which I highly doubt, then he knows he'd be finished. So, second chance, rolling on. Let's see how he does.
Well, let's get to the action upcoming here in the next few days. Friday hosting Luxembourg, and on the road on Monday at Ukraine. These matches obviously are must-win matches for the Seleção if they are to win Group B. What do you think, Aaron, does the Seleção need to continue to do, and what do they need to improve on in order to get the 6 points in these next two games?
I think the performances have been on the whole positive, but I still think that could have been a little bit more convincing, and that's even with, I mean, the Lithuania game finished 5-1, but I don't think that score really represents the match. I mean, everyone that watched the game will know. I mean, it was tied at 1-1 until I think it was about the 63rd minute, and it was quite nervy, and it wasn't until Ronaldo got that breakthrough and scored a couple, and then obviously Carvalho finished the game off late in the injury time. But I think the performances, I was really impressed, particularly if you go back to the Nations League, is that the performance wasn't revolving around Cristiano. It was, which I know there's the arguments, the long running arguments of he's so talented, but lots of the play does go through him, and sometimes it can seem a little bit forced. And it seems like the Selassie are starting to develop their own identity a little bit. So utilising Ronaldo and what he does best, and obviously we know how good of a player he is, how great of a player he is. So it's utilising the other players on the pitch too, and making sure that the attacks aren't all concentrated through one way. It's that continue to use the other world-class players on the pitch. And I think earlier on in the campaign, I think the two draws, that's why what makes me think the game against the Ukraine will be so difficult, because they're in really, really good form, the Ukraine. And they're the only other side in the qualifying group who are still unbeaten, along with Portugal. But I think they've conceded one goal in qualifying so far, scored 11, compared to Portugal, conceded 4, scored 1 less with 10. I think they're picking up points. They're winning games when they're not particularly playing well. It's the two draws with Portugal. Portugal's two draws, sorry. Don't want that to come back and haunt us. So I think convincing. I hope that the performance against Luxembourg is a convincing performance. I think that there's no reason why Portugal can't go out and lay out a real beating on Luxembourg. And that'll be great for confidence as well, especially at home. In Lisbon, so that'll be fantastic. And then going on the road to Ukraine, taking that confidence into Ukraine, and just playing the football we know we can play, not being too hesitant when we're on the ball, knowing that just because we're away from home, we can still go for it, still attack, but still remain solid in defence as well. I know the Selassie can be, you know, they can do that. So I do think in terms of improvements, move the ball around a little bit quicker. I think sometimes it can get built up in midfield, and then it seems like in the final third we can run out of ideas a little bit. So it's making sure we're keeping it fresh, not doing the same thing over and over and over, but hitting them with surprise, coming in field, using the centre mids, playing those threaded through balls, but then also switching it out onto the wing, getting those crosses into the box, getting Ronaldo into the box, those chances. You know when he's in the box trying to get ahead on something, that loose pieces will fall for other players to put, your Joao Felixes and your Bernard Silvers, people who can grab on those chances. So yeah, you utilize Cristiano, but don't concentrate everything through him. Don't over rely on him.
You know, obviously the matchup on Monday against Ukraine will more than likely determine the Selassie's fate in the group, whether they win the group, whether they take second, if disaster happens, if they finish outside of the top two. But let's say they finish in the top two. Do you think personally, Aaron, it matters to Fenerbahçe Sunç and the players if they win this group or not, or is the goal simply to qualify for Europe?
I think the goal is always, first and foremost, is always qualification. No matter how you get there, it's qualification. And we know in the past the Selassie don't do things easily. And having to play playoff draws and then third place run-up draws, and just by hook or by crook is getting there. But obviously, the position that we're in at the minute is a good one to be in. It's not the greatest, but it's a good one to be in. I think qualification, first and foremost, is the most important. But if you can win the group, which I think these two victories, they'll go a long way into helping, then why not? I think the only thing that it'll alter is what pot you end up in, whether you win the group or whether you go through as second place. But I think Fernando Santi, he'll have one eye on winning the group, being dominant, and that's good for confidence as well. Is that we might have drawn two matches earlier on in the campaign, but we turned it around, and you know, if we win these two games, that's four consecutive victories. Then going into the last the last couple of games. So, yeah, I think qualification is always first and foremost. I don't think he'll be going and saying, we need to win the group, we need to win the group. I think it's more, let's just get there. But if we can win the group, then, you know, why not?
And with that said, Aaron, it's always good to have your placement, your desire to win this group in your own hands, and that's what this Lesson does have. If they win out, they win the group, and they are the winners of Group B, and they go into Europe, into Euro 2020 as group winners. And yeah, confidence is a huge thing going into a tournament, no doubt about it. We are talking with Aaron Barton of Proxima Jornada. You can follow Aaron on Twitter at Proxima Jornada 1. That's Proxima Jornada, and the number 1. Speaking of Proxima Jornada, Aaron, how did Proxima Jornada start? When did it start? Why did it start? And what's been the best part of this venture for you so far?
Proxima Jornada is, I started the site about, well, funnily enough, I started the Twitter and the WordPress site over a year ago. It must have been about 14, 15 months ago. But then I went away from it. I posted, like, I must have had about 15 followers, and I posted one thing, and then that was it. I was sidetracked a little bit with work and with university and studying, and so I came away from it, and to be honest, I forgot all about it. And then one day, maybe about 7 or 8 months ago, something like that, I was just reading some articles online, and I was thinking, I wonder why I didn't go back to it. Like, I could give it another go. I enjoy writing. That was what my degree in university was in. It was in English, and obviously I've got a massive love for Portuguese football. That started years ago. That started in around 2003, around 2004. So I was about 7 or 8. So used to watch the national team, and then as a grown up, got older, started watching the club football, started watching the Primeira Liga and the Taças and the Portuguese teams in European competition. And obviously people like Cristiano and Jose Mourinho, and just the impact Portuguese and Portugal football was having on the rest of Europe and worldwide. And it was something I was always interested in. So I decided to, you know, kick on, start the page. And thought, if the writing is good enough, people will listen and people will read. And even if I have, you know, just a handful of people who read the articles, who share the articles, that's good enough for me. But luckily, I didn't see it, you know, spreading to be this big in such a short amount of time. So it just gives me excitement for the future. To be honest, that's the one word I probably use to sum it up is I'm really excited. And recently, I travelled down to, you said what was the best part? The best part was probably the first feature-length interview, which I was lucky enough to go to West Ham United, down to their training ground, Rush Green in London, and to meet Gonçalo Cardoso. And he, just speaking to him, getting that insight and talking Portuguese football, talking to a professional player, that was, especially at a Premier League club this early, that was a nice feeling. But it was a feeling that I thought, right, that's something I'm going to chase. So we've got some things lined up in the next couple of months, definitely. So I think the next year will be massive. There'll be more content. At the minute, we're posting semi-regularly, so we might get 3, 4, 5 articles a month maybe, and then obviously everything on the social media. But it's going to get, you know, a lot bigger, a lot better. The site's being upgraded, and we're just coming with more content and just more about Portuguese football. Just trying to deliver as much as I can to the masses while still keeping the quality really, really good.
Well, you know, I've really been enjoying your work, Aaron, and I know we reached out. We reached out a few months ago and exchanged some pleasantries, and obviously this is all part of giving Portuguese football, Portuguese soccer, as many outlets in the English speaking world as possible. And I really enjoyed the Gonçalo Cardoso profile. For those of you who don't know the background on the player, 18-year-old center back who started last season really in the youth program in the youth teams of Boa Vista. From about midway on, he got called up because of injury and because of some disciplinary issues with the team, and he plays Aaron, about 15, 16 straight games, and then he finds himself with a 5-year deal and with West Ham during the summer. So it's a great story. Definitely check out Aaron's site. Go to proximajornada1.wordpress.com for that uh, for that article and everything that is coming up with Proxima Jornada and Aaron. So, Aaron, I can't thank you enough for your time, and I'm glad we finally got together to do an episode, and look forward to having you back on here sometime soon.
Thanks very much, Danny, and to you as well. Keep going with all the podcast, like you said, just trying to spread the message, and I really enjoy what you guys are doing over there as well. So, yeah, definitely be back on again in the future. So thanks a lot. Thanks for the chance.
And our thanks once again to Aaron Barton of Proxima Jornada for joining us on episode number 23 of the Seleção podcast. Remember to follow Aaron on Twitter at Proxima Jornada 1. That's Proxima Jornada and the number 1. Our thanks once again for his time on the show. And make sure when you give him a follow, please, first of all, give him a follow and then let him know what a great job he did on our episode here. And yeah, he's a young dude. Didn't know how young he actually was until he said he was 7 while he was watching this last song in the early 2000s. That made me all kinds of made me feel all kinds of old. But that's all right. Just make sure you're following him. They're gonna have a lot of stuff coming up in the next few months. A lot of feature stuff and just another great outlet. Another outlet just like ours. Just like Portugal.net. Another English-speaking outlet for us fans of Portuguese soccer and the Seleção. So let's now head over to the two matches coming up here on Friday and on Monday. Two very important matches, crucial matches. If the Seleção are to win Group B and qualify as group winners to get to Europe to Euro 2020. Let's give you just a quick recap of where we are standings-wise. Portugal, obviously, as we mentioned in the last few episodes, they still have the game in hand. They have played 4 matches. Everyone else has played 5. But Ukraine currently sit atop of Group B, 13 points after 5 matches, 4 wins, 1 draw, no defeat, plus 10, goal differential, 11 goals scored, only one goal against. Portugal in second place, 2 wins, 2 draws, 8 points, 10 goals, 4 against, and a plus 6 in goal differential. Serbia, 2 wins, 1 draw, 2 losses. They have 7 points. Luxembourg in fourth with a draw, a win, and 3 losses. And rounding up the final 5 here is Lithuania. They have lost 4 times and have drawn 1. They have 1 point. So in terms of the immediate opponent on Friday, for this Seleção, that being Luxembourg, they have gotten to, they are currently in fourth place. They have gotten to fourth place and 4 points this way. They beat Lithuania in match day 1, 2-1. They lost to Ukraine at home 2-1 on just a brutal own goal in the 3rd minute of extra time. Just a brutal, brutal way to end that match. In match day 3, they drew away at Lithuania 1-1. They lost in match day 4 to Ukraine 1-0. And in match day 6, after being off of match day 5, lost at Serbia 3-1. So form not on their side here. This, in all intents and purposes, should be an easy match. Easy is the wrong word there. Nothing should be easy in qualifying, but this is a match that the Seleção should win. And this is a match where 3 points should be the expected outcome for the Seleção. In terms of the big match on Monday, Ukraine, their form looks like this. Again, I mentioned 4 wins, 1 draw. Obviously, the big draw that we all know about is the first match in day 1 of Group B action, where they came to Portugal and got a 0-0 draw against Portugal at the Stade de Luz. They have won 4 straight matches in group play since, beating Luxembourg away, as I mentioned, 2-1, beating Serbia at home, and probably the most impressive scoreline in all of Group B so far. They beat Serbia 5-0 at home. They beat Luxembourg again 1-0 at home, and then they went on the road and beat Lithuania 3-0. Very impressive are the Ukraine. I am going to butcher all of these names, but God help me, I've been practicing. We have Viktor Siankov. He leads the way with 3 goals, and the 2 other players have 2 other have 2 goals as well. I should say, Yevhen Konoplyanka and Roman Yarmachuk They each have two goals, so they're they lead the way in terms of goals scored in Group B. There's plenty of firepower there. We did not see it in the first match away to Portugal in match day one, but since then, in the four games that they've played, they've put up 11 goals, only have given up one. And definitely the toughest match for the Seleção of all is coming up on Monday at Ukraine. And again, in terms of the Seleção, four matches left. They have the Friday and the Monday matches, home to Luxembourg, away to Ukraine. And then they have a home match against Lithuania and then an away match in Luxembourg to close out qualifying next month, November the 14th and November the 17th. Very simple for the Seleção. They win out, they win Group B. If they get at least 9 points, they are guaranteed a spot in Euro 2020, whether it be as group winners or as the second place team. That 17 points is the, I guess, a magic number in terms of making sure that Serbia does not leapfrog the Seleção, because right now Serbia with 7 points and three matches left can only max out at 16 points. So obviously you want to make sure that you get your 17 points and make sure that Serbia does not leapfrog you there. Portugal and Ukraine, and there are about probably a million different ways that this can happen after this weekend, but you could have Ukraine and Portugal qualify for Euro 2020 after this weekend. If things go a certain way for Serbia, if they lose against Lithuania this weekend, that for all intents and purposes might put them out of contention, at least of winning the group. But Ukraine, as I do my math here, they just need 4 points in their last three matches to secure a spot in Euro 2020. The Seleção, as I mentioned, they win out, they get to Euro 2020 as group winners. But it looks as though it's going to be Ukraine and Portugal. Obviously, for us as fans of the Seleção, the number one thing is to qualify, whether it be first or second. But obviously, there's obviously more cachet and a lot more, and it helps the Seleção in terms of pod position if they get if they go in as group winners. So I would love to see this Seleção win out. I made the prediction in terms of what I thought would happen in the two matches against Serbia and Lithuania. I thought they would win both. They did win both. And I'm going to go ahead and go double or nothing, for lack of a better term. And I do think this Seleção will come out on top in both matches, Friday and Monday. The quality is there. Most importantly, the determination is there. I think that the way this campaign started, there is a number one thing, as Aaron mentioned in the interview, number one thing is to qualify. But I do think there is a sense of payback that they want to give Ukraine, because if I'm not mistaken, I believe there were 17, 18 corners in that match, and not one found the back of the net in any kind of set piece. And the Portugal outplayed Ukraine for the most part. They just obviously did not finish. And that was a huge issue in the first two matches, only scoring one goal at home and drawing both matches to start qualifying. But I do think that Portugal does have a sense of payback and wanting to, not payback, but just to let everyone know that this is their group. This is, we are Portugal. We are the defending European champions, and we want to go in as winners of our group to kind of quiet the ugly win, the ugly duckling, grind it out, kind of mentality that got the Seleção their 2016 European title. They can put goals away. They can put teams away. The quality is there. They are. I feel that it's their time to show it. And I think it all plays out this weekend on Friday and on Monday. In terms of the starting 11, I think I'd love to get in front of Sunshed. Well, first, just because what's going on in there? But I do think the starters will be, if I had to predict, and again, my predictions aren't worth very much, but if I had to predict, obviously, Rui Patrício in goal. I think it's going to be Pep and Ruben Dias at the center backs. I will obviously go with Rafael Guerreiro on the left. I do think Ricardo Pereira will get the start at right back against Luxembourg. A lot of these starters that I'm going to put in for this Luxembourg game, I think, is kind of a trial, for lack of a better term, for Fernand Sanch. If they play great, they earn another spot. They earn another opportunity against Ukraine. If there's any kind of struggle, you go back to maybe what you know or what you're more comfortable with against Ukraine. So, for instance, in the midfield, if he's healthy, obviously William Carvalho is a number one option. Me personally, if there's any doubt in terms of his health, I think I can afford to sit him against Luxembourg, and have Daniel Pereira and Ruben Neves man that that tandem central defense or central midfield defense, and just have William sit a few more days to get a few more days rest. So I predict it will be Daniel Pereira and Ruben Neves. If Fernand Sanch is saving him for Ukraine, which if I was him, that's what I would do. But Daniel Pereira, Ruben Neves at the defensive midfield positions, Bruno Fernandes starting at the other midfield position, and I think I'm going to go with Felix, and I think I'm going to go with Bernard Silva, and I think I'm going out on a limb. I'm going to give this Ronaldo kid a shot. You know, Luxembourg not the best quality opponent. I think if we want to bring him on, you know what? Make him the captain for the game too. Try that. I don't know. That's just me, but I think João Félix, Bernard Silva, and Cristiano Ronaldo will get the start there. So Patrice, Pep, Dias, Guerreiro, Ricardo Pereira, Daniel Pereira, Ruben Neves, Bruno Fernandes, João Félix, Bernard Silva, and Cristiano Ronaldo, I believe will be the starters for the Luxembourg game. Now, if all goes well and good and everyone plays their role, it would not surprise me to see this same starting 11 play against Ukraine. However, that Ukraine game has carries a lot of weight in terms of what this Lesson wants to do. If they want to go ahead and win this group and qualify as group winners, if there's any kind of doubt in the mind of Fernand Sanch, I could see if he goes with Ricardo Pereira on Friday, I could see him going back to Nelson Smith against Ukraine. I could obviously see William Carvalho starting and sitting Ruben Neves. And I could see João Félix going on the bench against Ukraine if he's not all world against Luxembourg. And I can see Gonçalo Guedes getting the start. Even André Silva, which I doubt would get a start. But again, let's not forget, this young man has scored 14, 15 goals for this Lesson, probably more than that, but he's done his part as part of this Lesson, and he's still only 23, so it's not like he's an old man trying to get last few appearances in. So the options are there. Obviously, I think against Ukraine, a player like Gonçalo Guedes, a much stronger physical player than João Félix is, I think that could help this Lesson in that sense. But if Felix gets his first goal, or if he plays very well, I could see him get another call up against Ukraine. But would not surprise me to see a starting 11 against Ukraine of Patrice, Pep, Ruben Dias, Guerreiro, Smith, Carvalho, Pereira, Daniel Pereira, excuse me, Bruno Fernandes, Bernard Silva, Gonçalo Guedes, and Cristiano Ronaldo. So, whatever the starting lineup is, I'm predicting two wins. Obviously, the game in hand is crucial to this Lesson because I mentioned it about a million times. If they win out, they win out, and they win the group, and there's nothing anyone else can do about it. So hopefully they get the job done on Friday and on Monday, and we'll have reaction and thoughts on those matches early next week, probably Tuesday, coming up on our next episode of the Lesson podcast. So my thanks once again to Aaron Barton of Proxima Jornada for joining us on episode number 23. And my thanks obviously to all of you guys for your continuous support and your listenership and your patronage of our show. Again, facebook.com/LessonPod, on Twitter and on Instagram @LessonPod. Email the show, LessonPod@gmail.com. Go to our website, LessonPod.com. Again, links to all of if you're listening to this show right now, and you happen to be like, you know what? I want to go to Lisbon. Oh, no, you know what? I was about to say something that I shouldn't say because the match is sold out. The match at Avalad is sold out. I'm going to take the link, the ticket link off the site because there are no more tickets to buy. So my apologies. But again, if for the game against, let's see, who do they have that last home game against? They have it against Lithuania. I will make sure to have the ticket link to the Lithuania match for November the 14th when that link is available for the public to buy tickets. But yeah, I mean, it's again, I get the link from the Federation themselves, and it's just another way to help promote the Slesong, which we all love and support. Yeah, just head out to SlesongPod.com for you know, player profiles and schedules and player information and episodes, most importantly. And yeah, just keep spreading the word on the show. We've got a nice little uptick in followers on Twitter and on Instagram, so we would greatly appreciate that. Remember to make sure if you have Apple Podcasts, leave me a 5-star review and leave me a nice little note just saying how much you enjoy the show. You know, if you got like 2 minutes, just, you know, it's free. It costs you nothing, but it means the absolute world to me. So again, just thank you guys always for your support. My name is Danny Pinto. I have been your host of episode number 23 and all other episodes of the Slesong Podcast. We will talk to you guys after the Friday and Monday qualifiers, and hopefully we'll be talking about 2 wins for your Slesong. And as always, Forza!